Hello, listeners, and welcome to Sound Vibe. I'm Jane Nicola, the most adorable podcast host, speaking to you from the sweet city of Shanghai. Now, in this pod number 20, I speak with Joseph Harrison, a singer-songwriter based in New Zealand, and I picked out his album, his new album, because of his ruminations and revelations into the void of darkness. Yes, dark thoughts and dark feelings that have resulted in the most amazing album that he's created in the last 3 years. So sit back and enjoy the show. Hello, Joseph. It's great to have you on Sound Vibe and welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And where are you ringing in from today?
I'm in Wellington in New Zealand, which has been my home for the last 25 years.
Okay, that's quite some time. And where are you actually from?
So I'm originally from Sheffield in South Yorkshire in England. And I left there when I was 25. So a month ago, I passed the point of spending half of my life in England and half of my life in New Zealand.
Congratulations. And are you in the north or the south?
Wellington is the right at the bottom end of the North Island. So as far as the whole of New Zealand goes, it's round about the centre.
Ah, that's a good place to be. Okay, well, we're here today to talk about Therapy of a Cynic, and I thoroughly enjoyed listening into your album, raging it out through my huge speakers, listeners, Sound Vibe listeners. Do tune into this album, very exciting one, and there was a lot of response to your cover being on my social media moments, which is quite provocative with you with a pair of dark shades and a huge light. So what drove you to release this album?
It was the product of a great many years of songwriting. Some of these songs go back 25 years. And they were just sort of hanging around in my head. They wouldn't leave me alone. And I was struggling to move on artistically. And at the same time, my life was changing in other ways, and I realized that I needed to put a final version of these songs out so I could sort of satisfy myself that they were done, they were dusted, and it was time for me to do some new material. So that's what it was. It took a long time to finish the album. It was about 3 years. But in the end, it felt like I could finally put them to bed and start doing something new.
Sounds like a great thing to do. Well, we're going to hear your track Moon now.
Rings. when the moon is high, when the water shines,
do you remember what drove you to self produce this album?
I'm a bit of a perfectionist. I have a great many friends who are better at many aspects of making albums like this than I am. It was a big learning curve. But because the songs were so personal to me, and because they'd been around for such a long time, I needed to be satisfied I'd recorded the versions that I could hear in my head. So I deliberately didn't involve anybody else. There were a couple of people I turned to here and there for a little bit of advice when mixing got difficult or anything. But really, I all of the time I spent in the studio was spent alone. And also, I didn't want to get to the end of the process and realize that it wasn't exactly what I wanted, and I should blame someone else. You know, it was me or it was nobody. So that's what it was.
Is there any specific catalyst for the songs that you write?
Well, that's a good one. A lot of them just come straight out of my head. Like anything artistic, a lot of the time artists don't really know where the ideas come from. Many of my songs are written in character. They're not really drawn directly from my own life. I like that kind of ambiguity and anonymity as well, you know, that... I get quite bored listening to songs by other people that are all about, I did this, I did that, and this is how I feel. You know, that sort of stuff doesn't really work for me. But characters and situations really interest me, particularly when there's room to interpret what the writer is actually saying and put your own meaning on it. I think that's more relatable in many cases. So a lot of the time, I just let those sort of songs come. But there are a couple of songs on the album that are quite obviously very personal and very cathartic for me. And they sort of came to me out of the blue, at least lyrically they did, and sort of in a big rush of emotions, and turned out to be some of the better work that I've done. So that probably should have taught me a lesson, really. Be more honest with what you're writing. But I don't know, maybe.
It's refreshing to hear your lyricism, and it's very upfront and direct. I feel a dark sense of humour, and it feels like aspects are being said that need to be said, which we can't always say in everyday life, which I think is a real relief to hear it.
Yeah, that's really goes back to what I was just saying about ideas and not really knowing where they come from. The song sort of focuses on the way that often we get dark thoughts. You might suddenly find yourself with someone who you should care about or in a situation you should be enjoying, and yet you find that maybe you're not enjoying it as much as you should. Maybe you're running away from something that should be positive in your life and you're pushing it away. You're not really sure why, but there's an urge to run, to hide, maybe to be unpleasant, all of those things. And that it's important, I think, to embrace and recognize that those thoughts are there, not necessarily to act on them, but to recognize that we all have a dark side, that we're not perfect beings, and that we can think dark thoughts, you know, hopefully not letting them dictate to us, but that they're there. So that's really where that song comes
from. Love it. Embracing those dark thoughts. I'll be doing that every day from now on, Joseph. Have your songwriting processes changed over the years?
Definitely, yeah. More to do with the technology available than the songs themselves, I think. I think in back in the day, sort of in the 80s, when I was a teenager and starting to perform and write songs with bands, really, there was only so much you could do. Very few people had access to recording equipment. You were lucky if you had a Tascam 4-track, you know. And so that sort of dictated the way that you wrote songs. You sat down in a room with your mates, you know, with your band, you wrote the song and you memorized it. And next week you get back in the rehearsal space and you played the same song. These days you don't have to work that way. Because of the ability to record digitally and copy and paste and all of that, I've found that over the probably the last 20 years, my songwriting technique has become very patchworked. So I'll have an idea. It might only be a few seconds of guitar or a few words or hum a melody. And then suddenly I know what the bass is going to do. So I'll record a few seconds of that and then maybe some vocal harmonies, even if it's just la, la, la. And you sort of slowly build up this collage on your screen of all of these bits and pieces that become the song. It's worth, I think, remembering, or I try to remember to stay true to the old fashioned, if you like, ways of songwriting, in that I think you should still record the song from beginning to end, rather than having too many loops and repeated patterns. Cause I think you can spot those and they don't come across as genuine. I think it's important to, for example, play the chorus three times. If it appears three times in the song, don't just, you know, copy and paste it back in, because you can tell that that's what's happened. And it's like breaking the fourth wall. You know, it takes you out of what you're listening to. But the actual composition process, can be bits and pieces all over the place. So I'm very thankful for the technology that we've got now, without letting it get out of control.
Were there any surprises in making this album, bringing the songs to life through the album?
Yeah, definitely. There were a couple of tracks that hit me very hard emotionally, which doesn't often happen for my songs. You know, I get excited about them. I enjoy writing them. You know, the thrill of knowing when you've done something really good, or the excitement of making a mistake that suddenly, you know, takes on a life of its own and becomes fantastic. But I very rarely have a big, overwhelming emotional response to my work. Probably because I don't generally open my soul. You know, it's, as I said earlier, it's usually character driven. But on the occasions that I wrote songs that were very much about me, they were quite a cathartic experience. And in fact, that's kind of where the title of the album came from, you know, that it was a form of therapy that I hadn't even seen coming. I just thought I needed to finish some songs. I didn't realize how deep they actually were. So yeah, that aspect of it was very surprising for me and not unwelcome.
Yeah. And can you tell me about your track, The Rest of My Days?
Yeah. So The Rest of My Days, that's both the oldest and the newest track on the album. I wrote the music for it, the chord sequence, 25 years ago, and it never changed. I always liked that music, but I was never happy with the arrangements I put around it or the lyrics I put to it until I was making this album. And then I had a sort of, oh, my God, where's my life going crisis, and sat down with those chords. And in the space of about 20 minutes, these lyrics came out that were both about writing the album and finishing the songs, and also about moving on with my own life in other more meaningful ways. So the song is about making the album, which is why I put it right, almost right at the end of the album. I've always been a fan of the Captain Fantastic album by Elton John, and he and Bernie Taupin did a very similar thing. The album is actually about writing music, and the conclusion of the album is quite beautiful. When I wrote this song, I thought, yeah, it needs to be at the end for very much the same reasons.
This wonderful room. I could change. Resentment sits barely contained. Decades of rage, blaming the world for mistakes that I made. I should let go.
When you came to the end of this album,
it was a huge sense of relief, and a big sense of achievement. I have quite a few projects going on at any one time, and this had been hanging around me for a long time. And I suppose it's like anything, you know, if you've got something that you're supposed to finish, that you're telling yourself to finish, and it's just not getting finished. At the time, you think, oh, that's a pain. I really should get on with it. But when you do finally achieve, you know, what you're setting out to do, the sense of relief is quite big. You know, it was bigger than I expected it to be. Doing the artwork, hitting send on the, on the distribution and going, right, it's done. I can't do anything about it now. You know, paying the $29 to have it distributed, all of that sort of stuff. It was a big moment. I suppose I should have bought a bottle of champagne, you know, but I didn't really. I just sort of breathed a great big sigh of relief and went, right, shall I write some new songs then? Get on with the next bit. But no, it was really nice.
Well, I think the title and the artwork has really hit a chord with people because I've had a lot of hits just from putting it on a few moments yesterday.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
And it is that sort of the photo, you on the couch.
Well, that was actually that's a bit of a half of job, that photo. Because of the title of the album, I'm lying on a couch. Originally, I was going to have myself also sitting in an armchair talking to myself like a psychiatrist sitting by a patient. But I don't have the Photoshop skills, and I was over it. So I just put one photograph in there and thought, well, you can imagine the rest or put your own meaning on it, which is kind of, you know, the spirit of the songs anyway. So, that's where that came from.
Yeah. What do you hope people will take away from this album?
Well, I hope they enjoy it for one thing. That's the main thing. But I hope that it strikes a chord with them, that they can put their own slant on the songs and draw their own meaning from them. I'm not a big fan of explaining to people what songs are supposed to be about. I prefer it when people listen to something and decide what it's about. And that gives them ownership of the work, you know, in some way. I think there'd be nothing worse than meeting your heroes and telling them what you thought of their album, and they said, well, actually, you're wrong. You know, that that wouldn't be nice. So I hope people can relate to it, but that they relate to it in their own ways, that they don't need to bombard me with questions, you know. I think that would be nice. Just that people enjoy it, really.
That sounds like therapy in itself, Joseph. Well, we're coming to your track Blameless now, and this really struck a chord with me, and many of them did. But sort of going through the whole album, and then this one, which is tailored down to just guitar and voice, so it's quite naked and it's quite bare, and all the emotions have been raging, and all this exploration, kaleidoscope of colour, as I'm hearing your amazing work. It sort of brought me back to the core at the end. So I just wondered what you had to say about Blameless.
Well, this version, of course, there's two versions of Blameless on the album. So there's the earlier version, which is very much a pop song and was written with the idea of making people dance. And then there's this version, which I never really intended to record. I sat down one night with a 12-string guitar and I was just messing around and started playing Blameless in a very sort of a unplugged way and decided it sounded good. So it hadn't actually been part of the original plan. And I sort of put it on the end of the album as almost like a 90s style whisper track, you know, which I was always a fan of. The stripped back approach, definitely, as you say, it gives it a very, very different feel. Blameless is a song that is absolutely written in character. Lyrically, I think it's quite dark. It's even, you know, possibly sinister that the protagonist has done something. And they've done something unpleasant. You don't find out what it was. You don't really find out why they've done it. But it's quite dramatic, I think. As I say, the acoustic version, really just came out of the blue and I liked it. So I put it on the end, and I'm glad you like it too. I was actually quite surprised that you picked it out, which was very gratifying.
I cannot tell you what I've done. Guess you'll find out when the headlines come. I planned a shock for everyone. A wake-up call, but it's all gone wrong. I cannot tell you what I said.
But my words will live on long after I'm dead. I had it figured in my head, but they shut me down for the life that I led. I couldn't justify a moment more living somebody else's life. I cannot tell you who's to blame, but I guarantee you remember my name. I couldn't justify a moment more living somebody else's life. I'm hardly blameless, but you're not so pure. Did you think I'd just give up and die? All those clowns were making sounds, never caring if the consequences damned us all to hell. Someone had to do something, I knew it wouldn't be you, so I took this bloody duty on myself. I cannot tell you what I've done. I cannot tell you what I've done.
Well, I've asked you all my questions, and I wondered if there's anything else you'd like to add.
I think we've covered it, really. I mean, it's nice to be able to talk about the album. It's really nice that people are responding to it. If you get the chance, if you're in New Zealand, or if I get the chance to go overseas and perform, I'd like to see what people think of the live performance as well, because I perform many of these songs with my band Tower of Flints, but we perform them very differently. It's very much a rock band setup, two guitars, drums, bass, a lot more energetic. So it's almost like there's two versions of the songs. There's the Joseph E. Harrison versions and the Tower of Flints versions. And we're hoping to release a live album recorded recently at a gig, which will be Tower of Flints, but performing these songs. So that will be extremely, you know, very, very different to the album itself. So I hope people enjoy that too. And yeah, I mean, I'm just excited to hear what people think of the songs, and like, you know, you picked out songs I wasn't necessarily expecting you to pick out, which was really nice. You just never know, you know. So, yeah, I hope people enjoy it.
And where's the best place to buy your album and get hold of your album?
Well, it's on all platforms. I really hope people buy it on Bandcamp, because then I actually get paid for it. I calculated recently that if people pay the minimum buy price of $7 on Bandcamp, that's the equivalent of 12,500 streams on Spotify. So, you know, that'd be nice. But it's on Spotify if you want it. It's on Apple Music. It's on all the platforms. It's on YouTube as well.
Well, thank you, Joseph. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to you all the way from Shanghai to New Zealand. Fantastic. And
thank
sorry,
you.
I didn't know where Wellington quite was on the map.
Well, now you do. Now you do.
In the centre. Okay. Lovely. You've been listening to Joseph Harrison talking about his album Therapy for a Cynic. If you've enjoyed this podcast, you might like to listen into another, or drop me a line at janenicholasoundvibe.com. You can also join my Patreon or give a donation if you'd like to. All the info is on my website. Thanks for listening in to Sound Vibe. Till next time.